This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, March the 11th, 2016. Hello and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, where we read extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle. I'm Peter Lydiard, your presenter for today, standing in for John Parker, who is on holiday. We also have a new editing team, Sue Frayne, Anne Brew and Pat Whitfield. And they were assisted, as this is their first stint at editing, by Linda Vincent. Thank you to all of them. It was a pleasure to meet you yesterday and to share a cup of tea and a chat. Now, I'm joined by our three readers this week, Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Richard Martin.
Hello.
First, two or three of our regular notices. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with recording that you have received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870370. Just to remind you that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, you might like to know that as well as using the memory stick in the box, you can also access your weekly recordings of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. And there you can either listen to it off the website or you can download the recording to listen to it later. Now, the main headlines this week are Grant for Party is branded disgrace, loving tributes left for mums by children, battle over sure start steps up. So, Margot, could we have, what's all this about the Grant for the Party being branded a disgrace?
At the risk of repeating you, plans to give a grant to a Winchester Street Party to mark the Queen's birthday have been branded a disgrace. The event on June the 11th has been organised by Winchester Cathedral and is part of a celebratory weekend which will not only mark the Queen's 90th birthday, but it will also be a leaving party for the Dean, the very Reverend James Attwell. Organisers applied to Hampshire County Council for £10,000 to help pay for nearly a third of the event, which is set to cost £33,140. But Lib Dem County Councillor for Totten South and Marchwood, David Harrison, believes providing the grant as the council makes cuts to services like Sure Start centres and household recycling plants and other budgets is financially irresponsible. He described the plan as a disgrace. Councillor Harrison said, "If you think about it, in almost every area of local government at the moment, we are being told to have make substantial cuts to the budget. It is affecting everything from household waste recycling plants, highways budgets, school buses, and in every one of these cases, we are being told to cut back. For the purposes of a street party, is it not unreasonable that they can cut back on their ambitions and maybe people can bring their own food and have their own entertainment? We have had cutbacks every year since the recession in 2008. And we have to go to the point where all the obvious savings have been made, and the savings being proposed to essential services will have a major effect on the public. And these effects are now being felt. So it is not really the time to invest £10,000 into a street party." The decision on the grant was due to be made at the County Policy and Resource Committee today. There are expected to be numerous street parties in the Winchester area on June the 11th, 12th. Parties on June the 11th are planned in Fordington Avenue and Western Road in Full Flood and Queen Street in Twyford. On June the 12th, there will be parties at the Square, High Street, Bishop's Waltham, West Street, Soberton and St James's Villas, Winchester. In a statement, the Cathedral said, "On Saturday, June the 11th, when the nation will celebrate the Queen's 90th birthday, Winchester Cathedral intends to host a community-based street party in the cathedral grounds. The cathedral has applied for grants to support the costs involved with staging and providing entertainment for an event on this scale and nature, focusing on bringing families together from across the wider community in this very special celebration.
Thank you, Margot. And John, what's the story about loving tributes left for mums by children?
Yes, dozens of families became a little closer on Saturday as Winchester children left moving tributes to their mums. A Mother's Day message wall at the Brooks Shopping Centre attracted some 150 people on Saturday, with youngsters invited to get creative in showing their appreciation. "My mum is as beautiful as this flower," one message said, with an accompanying drawing, while others paid respects to mothers no longer with them. A professional graffiti artist got the mural started on two boards before children were let loose on the canvas. The wall was displayed on Mother's Day itself and throughout the week. Yesterday was the last chance to read the messages. Liz Marsden, Marketing and Communications Manager, said, "The team are overwhelmed with the volume of children who got involved."
Thank you, John. And Richard, what's this about a battle for Sure Start?
Well, campaigners are battling to save vital children's centres in Hampshire, and they've stepped up their fight. As reported in the Chronicle, dozens of Sure Start children's centres across the county could be replaced with district hubs. But activists believe the plans could be shelved if council chiefs dig into a multi-million pound relief fund. Sure Start users have organised a demonstration to protest the cuts outside a drop-in event to discuss the plans at Lyndhurst Community Centre from 9:30 a.m. on March the 22nd. They've also made freedom of information requests to the council on the number of children taken into care and the associated costs of this, as they believe cutting the centres could lead to rising numbers. A petition has also been launched that received more than 500 signatories in just 4 days. The controversial proposal will see 11 hubs in Hampshire instead of 54 centres. Drop-in services will be closed, social groups will be charged, and staffing could be cut by up to 60%. Parents and families would be expected to travel up to an hour to their nearest hub. In Winchester, the merry-go-round at Wickham Primary School is earmarked as the hub for the area. But lanterns, sparklers in Winnell, the carol in Stanmore, rain and shine in Kingsworthy, sunbeams in Alresford, little petals in Bishop's Waltham, Happy Valley in Denmead could all close. One of the lead campaigners is mum of two, Catherine Ovenden, 36, of Totten, who successfully fought against similar plans in 2011. She believes the centres could be saved if council chiefs used cash from a £19 million government relief fund announced last week. Miss Ovenden said the proposal is short-sighted and end up costing Hampshire County Council more money. Without the early intervention provided by Sure Start, the council can't support families to do the best they can, and it will end up with more children being taken into care. The transition money is there to cushion the blow of cuts, and if it's not being used for that, then what is it being used for? Deputy Leader Keith Manns refused to say whether the prospect of using the relief fund would be looked into, but stressed difficult decisions need to be made. Councillor Mann said, "The settlement the council has received from government was a reduction of nearly £50 million compared to the previous year, when we expected a reduction of £20 million. The £9 million of temporary transitional funding is only for 2 years, and even taking it into account, we are still more than £20 million less well off each year than we expected to be. Plugging part of the gap in the shorter term will not remove the longer-term pressures which remain and which could be exacerbated in further years. The County Council needs to reduce its recurring spending of £113 million by April 2017 and by a further £140 million by 2019-20.
Thank you, Richard. Well, a quick rundown of what follows. We start with the death notices, and then we have Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, chronicle comment, Khalid Aziz's column, Belgar and What's On, and we finish that section with the excitement of the lighting up times. We now have the death notices. Avery, Joan Avery, formerly of Alsford, peacefully, 31st of October 2015. Her ashes were interred in Alsford Churchyard on the 2nd of March 2016.
Coburn, Robert Martin Coburn, peacefully at home in the USA, 29th of February, aged 51, after a long battle with cancer.
Conway, Brian Conway, 6th of March, aged 81, after suffering a long illness.
Cook, Hazel Cook, known as Bubbles, at home on the 27th of February, aged 84.
Dodds, Alan Edward Russell Dodds, peacefully on the 8th of March, aged 96.
Harrington, Keith Charles Harrington, peacefully 28th of February, after a long battle with cancer.
Hewlett, Edith Mary Hewlett, peacefully on the 28th of February, aged 85.
Holt, that's spelt H-O-U-L-T, Norman Harry Holt, former managing director, Bristol Street Motors, Shirley and local magistrate, peacefully at home on the 3rd of March, aged 82.
Jordan, Gladys Jordan, formerly of Mountbatten Court, peacefully on the 1st of March, aged 92.
Kneller, Ernest Alfred Kneller, known as Skip, 24th of February, aged 87.
Lely, Graham John Lely, suddenly at home on the 3rd of March, aged 65.
Lewis, Sylvia May Lewis, formerly of St Cross, peacefully at home on the 1st of March, aged 87.
Oakley, Alan Reginald Oakley, unexpectedly but peacefully, 29th of February, aged 87.
Primer, Victor Primer, at home, 24th of February.
Robbins, Ethel Robbins, on the 4th of March, aged 104.
Simmons, Clifford Simmons, formerly of Winchester, Cliff worked for many years at Hampshire County Council Education Department, peacefully in Bournemouth, aged 96.
Vale, Jenny Vale, on the 2nd of March.
We now go on to Christian comment, which this week is titled Church is set to celebrate Cheese Fair, and it's contributed by Rosemary A. Baker. Margot, please.
Rosemary Baker entitles her article, The Church is Set to Celebrate Cheese Fair. The Eastern Orthodox Church celebrates the Christian season of Lent more rigorously than many other denominations. For instance, it may surprise you to learn that we are in what is called Cheese Fair Week, and that this culminates in Cheese Fair Sunday, this coming Sunday. During Cheese Fair Week, meat is already forbidden to Orthodox Christians, making it a meat-free week. During what is referred to as Great Lent, which follows, a stricter fast is adhered to, where no meat, eggs, fish, or dairy produce is allowed. So it is the last opportunity to indulge. The Russian blini, a type of rich pancake, is traditionally eaten at this time. Also, parties and dancing will no longer be allowed. Cheese Fair, therefore, also includes masquerades, snowball fights, sledding, riding on swings, and plenty of sleigh rides. Where there is snow, of course. In some regions, each day of Cheese Fair had its traditional activity. One day for sleigh riding, another for the sons-in-law to visit their parents-in-law, another day for visiting the godparents, etc. The mascot of the celebration is usually a brightly dressed straw effigy of Lady Maslenitsa. As the culmination of the celebration on Sunday evening, Lady Maslenitsa is stripped of all her finery and put to the flames of a bonfire. Any remaining blintzes are also thrown on the fire, and Lady Maslenitsa's ashes are buried in the snow to fertilise the crop. Cheese Fair Sunday is also called Forgiveness Sunday, indicating a desire for God's forgiveness, which lies at the heart of Lent. At the service of Vespers on the Sunday evening, all the people ask forgiveness of each other, and so Great Lent begins. The day following is called Clean Monday, and so everyone makes their final preparations for Easter with a clean slate. The Western Christian Church usually refers to this coming Sunday as Passion Sunday, or the first Passion Sunday as sometimes the Sunday following, traditionally called Palm Sunday. It is also rather confusingly given this name. In this context, the word passion refers to the suffering and death of Jesus, and the set Bible readings for this day are about this event. It is always interesting to look at the church year and the customs and traditions associated with them. Also, the differences between the various denominations can be very illuminating. They were usually devised to convey important messages and eternal truths by which simple people who could not read or write could live their lives. Those eternal truths still have much to teach us today about how to live our lives, how to live in community, and how the peoples of the world should or could live together in peace.
Thank you, Margot.
This letter is from Michael Hodder, and it's entitled Refuse Permission, Sir. Mr. Edmund Bush's excellent letter, Chronicle March the 3rd, outlining the severe shortcomings in the proposal for the gas mill at Sparsholt College, is welcome, especially as it is government policy for an assumption to approve such products. It is not a green and environmental project. It is a big industrial plant to be set in a countryside environment with all the problems encountered by transporting the material needed by tractors, HGVs and tankers, causing widespread pollution across the countryside, damage to roads and delays to every traffic within the intended 15-kilometre radius of collection. There is no transport plan outlined and no firm evidence that there will be sufficient material to make the project a viable and economic concern. The proposers have to provide answers to the many questions which objectors are posing, which so far they have been unable to do. Equally, the Winchester City Council Planning Committee has to be very thorough in examining the proposal for the long-term good of all those who will be severely affected. If approval is given for only grass and rye as material for the Sparsholt College digester, which in other plants has proved insufficient and not economic, leading to the seeking of permission for other materials or even widening the radius of collection. There has been a history of fires and explosions on similar sites, so there must be assurances given that this danger has been assessed and proper precautions taken. There does not appear to have been an environmental impact assessment, an EIA, which in the light of the shortcomings in the proposal and possible effect on wildlife should be essential. Also to be taken into consideration is the fact that there are already two similar digesters, Farley Wallop, Basingstoke and Pickett Peace Andover, nearby, and could also provide the education for students for which the college has declared as one of the reasons for building this project. On the basis of what is known, planning permission should be refused. That's from Michael Hodder, Home Lane, Sparsholt, Winchester.
Kate McIntosh entitles her letter, It Beats Nuclear. Sir, contrary to the ill-informed views of Edmund Bush in the Chronicle Letters of March the 3rd, Sparsholt is about as perfect a location for an anaerobic grass gas digester as can be found anywhere. The raw material, the grass, and the energy consumer are closely adjacent. The vegetable matter would otherwise be left to compost, producing methane, which is 86 times as potent a greenhouse gas as carbon dioxide. It is a proposal neatly forming a virtuous circle. It is true that we need many more such schemes to provide for baseload, since as this means of energy production is totally flexible and can be switched on and off, unlike nuclear. The Hinkley Point C reactor project has led our government to promise a level of subsidy to the operators, which will lead to a doubling of energy prices, even if it is constructed within the present budget, which would be a first for a nuclear power station. Which option is preferable? Kate McIntosh, MBE, RIBA, West End Terrace, Winchester.
Tompion Platt writes about a car's crackdown. Sir, the latest RCP report into UK air pollution highlights the importance of getting more people walking and cycling. Road traffic is the most significant cause of air pollution, and with 39% of journeys under 2 miles being driven, swapping 4 wheels for 2 feet is an easy and effective way to tackle the problem. The government has a legal duty to protect people from the harmful effects of pollution, which are more likely to affect children and older people. It must prioritise investment to make our towns and cities safe and attractive so that more people start walking and experiencing the benefits it brings. It's good to see the report recommending local authorities be given the power to limit the amount of cars on the road, especially around schools. This results in safer, cleaner and healthier streets for all of us and would go some way to tackling inactivity levels too. Very simply, more walking means less air pollution. Tompion Platt, Head of Policy and Research, Living Streets, London.
Phil Gagg entitles his letter, "Pollution is Killer." Sir, for those who say seeing is believing when they deny the harmful effects of invisible diesel vehicle pollution, David Ashe's photograph in the Chronicle of March the 3rd will come as a horrible revelation. There can now be no doubt that Winchester is badly affected by traffic pollution and that it is a major threat to our health. On page 13 of the same issue, you report that the Royal College of Surgeons estimates that 40,000 people die nationally per year from traffic pollution and that it causes harm to unborn and young children. This makes the Winchester share of traffic pollution deaths 40 per year, or nearly one per week. We worry about illegal drugs, yet they kill far fewer people than traffic pollution, about 2,250 nationally per year. Even alcohol claims no more than 8,000 lives per year. It is time we took action to make sure the death plume no longer hovers above Winchester every time the sun shines. A great opportunity is the review of the City Council car parking strategy. We must remove car parks from central Winchester and encourage cars to park at the park and ride car parks or next to the roads they use to come into Winchester, for example, at the Chesil, Tower Street, Cattle Market, or Station West car parks. We should remove any reason for cars to join the one-way system and pollute St. George's Street, Jury Street, or City Bridge. One especially worrying factor has emerged recently. Traffic pollution is bad enough for cyclists, pedestrians, and people sipping coffee at pavement cafes. It is 2.5 times worse for the people in their cars driving along polluted streets. Removing cars from central Winchester will be the best thing we can do for the health of people who currently park their cars in the centre. Phil Gagg, St. Swithin Street, Winchester.
Karen Barrett writes about the duty of councillors. Sir, now that we're into the run-up to the local elections in May, it's worth remembering that the main duty of a councillor is to represent residents. Whilst this means participating in the City Council's formal business, shaping policy, developing strategy and making decisions, much of a member's time is spent on casework and supporting community activities. Casework can include neighbour disputes, tenant and landlord conflicts, parking problems and so on. Whilst these matters usually involve liaising or putting residents in touch with appropriate officers and services, it often requires a more hands-on approach, depending on the nature of the problem and the vulnerability of the individual needing help. When it comes to requests to ward members for support on planning matters, it is more likely to concern the potential impact of a building development next door rather than major projects. In addition, a councillor should expect to attend a reasonable number of community events, school, church fetes, charity fundraising, etc., often at weekends, and also support community initiatives. There are no set hours for the job, and nobody standing for election should be under any illusion as to the level of commitment required. Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
And this from Tim Fell of Winchester Independence. Sir, your readers may be forgiven if five different references to Winchester Independence on four separate pages of the Hampshire Chronicle, March the 3rd, leave them a little confused about what we hope to achieve. But they needn't be. Our overriding aim is a simple one: to replace the sterile adversarial groupthink of party politics with an open-minded debate among councillors, independent of any preconceptions, dogma or party whip. When the people of Winchester and District vote on May the 5th, they will elect a complete new council, an ideal opportunity to start a process of reform. Readers who want to know more can go to wind.org.uk and read the aims and ways of working set out in our constitution. They can come to our launch meeting at St Peter's Church Hall at 7pm on March the 17th and hear accounts of how the election of independence has helped councils elsewhere to reflect the needs and aspirations of their voters better. And they can hear from the horse's mouth what we're really campaigning for, not what others, letters from party activists, or even your news and editorial columns, have with varying degrees of accuracy told them we're proposing. Tim Fell, Winchester Independence, Beerweek Avenue, Winchester.
Martin Todd, a city councillor, entitles his letter, Past Lessons. Sir, Judith Martin noted last week in the Chronicle of March the 3rd that, quote, a lesson from other councils that have elected independence is that the whole process changes, end of quote. She forgot to mention that Winchester City Council had an independent group on the council for almost the entire history of the Silver Hill project, from the mid-1990s right up until 2012, with the last independent councillor surviving until 2014. And what was the group that led the City Council scrutiny process that was so criticised by Claire Lloyd-Jones for a longer period than any other group or party over the life of the Silver Hill project? Yep. It was the Independents, from 2008 to 2012. Martin Todd, City Councillor, Lloyd Lindsay Square, Week, Winchester.
Give Winchester a sporting chance, writes Catherine Morris. Sir Chris Allen is right when he highlights the importance of the exact location of the new leisure centre at Bar End, Chronicle Letters, February the 25th. The old depot, Serco site, should be used for car parking, with part of the garrison ground, owned by Tesco, used for buildings, but safeguarding the pitches as part of a wider sports facility, and thus preserving the open spaces together with existing children's play areas. Tesco should engage with the community and support the development of sports and leisure facilities here. Readers can visit WinchesterSalt, that's all one word, .org, that's WinchesterSalt, S-A-L-T, .org, and sign an open letter to Tesco asking them to work with the residents of Winchester to protect the garrison ground and create a community sport and recreational hub at Bar End to give Winchester a sporting chance. Catherine Morris, Carmans Lane, Compton.
Caroline Beasley is looking for information about soldiers of World War One. So, have any Chronicle readers any relatives from Winchester who experienced the First World War? We are a group of residents who are researching the lives of local men who died in the First World War. Our project, called Soldiers of Hyde, seeks to learn about these local men and remember the sacrifice of those who died on the battlefronts. The names we have for 1916 are Barnes, Bendel, Brooks, Everest, there's two of those, Gilmore, Gray, Hamilton, House, Loder, Loveland, Mason, Offer, Page Simmons, Munt, Smith, Alfred Charles, and Wyatt. If you recognise one of these names as your ancestor or wish to find out more, please contact us to find out how you could add to our knowledge. Email me at cbeasley, that's C.BEASLEY, cbeasley48@btinternet.com. That's Caroline Beasley, Arthur Road, Hyde, Winchester.
John Harrison is so, so sad. He titles the letter, No Crosswords. Sir, it is with some sadness that I have learned that you no longer give a £25 prize for a correct entry to the Hampshire Chronicle crossword. Since 1994, I have been a lucky winner on 14 occasions. As there is no longer a prize, it doesn't seem worth sending in a completed crossword. Notwithstanding, I wish to record my thanks to the compiler for an outstanding general knowledge crossword for over 22 years. It has given me an enormous amount of pleasure, as I have no doubt also for many of your readers. John Harrison, Uplands Road, Winchester.
Thank you, Margot. Now, Hampshire Chronicle roving reporter has been wandering around Winchester recently, asking, as the Queen approaches 90, is our monarch relevant to modern Britain? The first person they asked was Himanshu Patel, 53, a GP, of St Giles Hill, who said, whilst I'm a Republican, I believe that at this point in time, an institution like the monarchy actually makes sense, with questions over Britain staying in the European Union.
Dorothy Chick, aged 69, retired, of Fraser Road, Kingsworthy, said, I'm very much for the Queen. She's been a wonderful role model and a remarkable lady. She's seen a lot of changes and she's moved with it.
Isaac Crawford, 18, teaching assistant at the Pilgrim School of the Close, said, she's irrelevant to me, I'm Australian. I think England could function fine without her. That would have a social backlash.
And finally, Sue Willoughby, 70, retired of St Anne's Close Badger Farm, said, I think she's relevant. People look up to her and she's been really faithful and loyal to her country.
Thank you all. And I think we ought to apologise for any Australians listening for the cod Australian accent from John. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air at the New Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. Or you can email them at news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now we move on to editorial comment. John will be reading the editorial, which is about this grant for the Queen's birthday celebration. Thank you, John.
Yes, the headline of it is, Public should chip in cakes and not taxes. Hampshire has just cleaned for the Queen. Should it now pay for her birthday party? A row has broken out over plans to give £10,000 of public money to Winchester Cathedral for its 90th birthday event in June. At a time when austerity is paring back public services, there is no doubt that Hampshire County Council has bigger fish to fry. As we report, Sure Start centres are the latest services to suffer from county and government cutbacks. Winchester could lose all its centres, which provide parents with a vital safety net between birth and school. Perspective is needed. £10,000 is small change to an organisation as large as the County Council and would not fund a bus route or Sure Start centre for long. It would be sad to think austerity measures mean a curmudgeonly tight fist at all times. Winchester Cathedral does not need a lavish party. It has spent the last 2 years putting its cap out to the city to help fund its multi-million pound restoration and should not need more public money. There are other royal events taking place in the city and district which appear to be going swimmingly without a five-figure public subsidy. The weekend will be a great occasion, and the Chronicle welcomes the celebrations, but the public should chip in with tea and cake, not taxes.
Thank you, John. Well, on the same subject, Khalid Aziz writes, tidying up for Her Majesty. Richard, please.
Yes, and he says, I have cleaned for the Queen and I'm feeling rather noble. When a nationwide campaign was proposed to clean up rubbish, rubbish-strewn Britain as a way of showing Her Majesty how much we care about her as she approaches her 90th birthday, I thought it a rather practical, if quaint, initiative. Certainly, it couldn't surely be controversial. If it was, and the street parties, the length and breadth of the land that regularly mark jubilees, have to be lumped in as a dastardly undermining of free will. Anyway, wasn't Clean for the Queen being promoted by none other than Kirsty Allsop, the fragrant TV property bore, who has us glued to the set, trying to divine some underlying but unspoken romantic tryst with her co-presenter Phil Spencer? In my TV days, it was called Chemistry and was the holy grail of ratings-chasing TV executives. But back to Clean for the Queen. Who could be against it? Surely no one. But I hadn't reckoned with Spartist Guardianista Michelle Hanson, who opined in a rather curmudgeonly article that she'd rather swim in sewage than clean for the Queen. Hearing her go head-to-head with Kirsty on the radio, uttering some nonsense about not wanting to be told what to do by the likes of Michael Gove and Boris Johnson, only redoubled my determination to be in on the act. And so it was that last weekend I joined tens of thousands across the nation and half a dozen or so denizens of St Mary Bourne. We were bidden by arch-organiser, the redoubtable Mrs F., to assemble at 1100 hours at what I thought was the square in the centre of the village. However, our renowned parish magazine, Hill and Valley, had just declared that the area was to revert to its former Middle English name, Summerhaw. A haw, spelt H-A-U-G-H, is apparently a piece of flat alluvial land by a river. And according to Mrs F., who is not in any circumstances to be argued with, is pronounced whore rather than, as I tentatively suggested, only to be swiftly corrected, huff. Anyway, we assembled, were issued with litter pickers, uppers, and the litter picker uppers, that is, sorry, and the obligatory black bin bag. Mr. F., who is experienced in the rubbish department, suggested a two-pronged pincer movement along the southern approach to St Mary Bourne, starting beyond our excellent watering hole, the Bourne Valley Inn. To be fair, we have a litter-picking event about this time every year before spring has burst forth and while man's detritus is exposed for all to see. And doing it for the Queen added extra impetus to our efforts. And she would have been pleased. Chief amongst items discarded in our hedgerows were cans, predominantly lager, which the forensic in me indicates the thoughtlessness of youth tossing their empties out of moving cars. Then it's crisp packets. Amazing how long the metallised paper lasts. One that had clearly lain there for some time was full of water. After an hour, we had about a large big bin bag between us and felt pretty good about it. As a smug village dweller, I wondered how the townies had done. Next time I escape Winchester onto the A34 via Winnell, will I no longer be confronted by a landscape of litter? I hope so, but somehow I doubt it. So, how to prevent littering in the first place? Keep Britain Tidy played a big part in my school days, but I get the impression that half a century later, what with the national curriculum and all, its principles have been edged out of young minds. In researching Somerhaw, I read that St Mary Bourne's village stocks used to be sited there. A plan was beginning to form. And then I thought of the Guardian's Miss Hanson and her desire to swim in sewage. Well, our village might be able to oblige her. The water table is well up again and Southern Water has begun its tanker pumping to stop the lavatories backing up, bringing deep joy to village residents. Pumping the main sewer directly into the Bourne rivulet will be next. Welcome to St Mary Bourne, Miss Hanson.
My word, yes. Well, thank you, Richard. Well, what have we got now? Oh, we've got Belgarum, haven't we? Belgarum also gives us a rather alternative view of the news. Margot, could we have the first item, please?
Yes, but it's a much more sober article, I'm afraid, after the last one. But still, it's exciting. Pop classic re-recorded. Dean James Attwell is thrilled that the 1960s pop classic Winchester Cathedral will receive a new lease of life. The song by the new vaudeville band was a massive hit in November 1966, reaching number one and selling 3 million copies in the UK and the USA. Now the reworded song is to be released at a concert in aid of the Winchester Cathedral appeal. It will be performed in Winchester Cathedral by the Cathedral Boy Choristers this Saturday, March the 12th, at the Wainfleet Singers Gala Concert. Dean James said, "It is immensely exciting that the Cathedral Choristers will be releasing the new version of Winchester Cathedral for the 50th anniversary of its initial launch. We are hugely lucky that Jeff Stevens, who wrote the melody and the lyrics, has backed this venture and written a new set of uplifting words. The arrangement by Andy Lumsden is stunning. It's a Dean's dream come true." The reworded song has been recorded by the Cathedral Boy Choristers under the Signum Classics label and will be launched on March the 12th in the presence of the songwriter. The CD will be on sale at the concert and afterward through the cathedral shop, with half of the sale price going directly to the cathedral appeal. And there is a colour photograph accompanying this article in which the boy choristers are unfamiliarly in their mufti uniform, no red gowns to be seen anywhere, and choirmaster, Andrew Lumsden, and Jeff Stevens, the originator of the words, are standing with them in front of the screen in the nave of the Winchester Cathedral.
Pub signs for sale. They are a unique piece of largely lost Winchester social history. A former Winchester resident has three enamelled pub signs from 1938 available for sale. One is for the Lunways Inn, which used to stand at ancient crossroads on the A33 north of Winchester before it closed around 20 years ago and has since burned down. The others are for the Battery Inn and a free house. Steve Nunn found them under the floorboard at his home in Swan Lane, where he lived from 1967 to 2000. He believes his house was originally built in 1888, a home for workers at the nearby Lion Brewery on Hyde Street, later taken over by Marston's. The company depot carried on in Hyde Street until the late 1990s. He told Belgarum, "I wondered if any collector or restaurant or bar cafe in the city would be interested in making me an offer for them. I certainly want them to find a good home, as they're out of place with me here in Cornwall." Mr. Nunn can be contacted on 0209 719 481. That's 0209 719 481.
This is a piece entitled Chutzpah Prize Goes To... Bravo the Lib Dems for their heroic stance against building housing in place of River Park Leisure Centre. A recent campaign leaflet highlighted their support for continued sport and culture use if the centre moves to Bar End, saying that the suggestion of new housing was raised by the Tory council cabinet. What they failed to mention was that the issue was in fact raised from the backbenches and swiftly ruled out by the Conservative leader. It does not bode well for May's election that the opposition is having to invent policies to oppose its rivals on. Elsewhere in its literature, the party claims to have driven through the move to ditch Silver Hill developer TH Real Estate. However, their expertise did not stop them from lifting language unattributed from a Chronicle report earlier this year. But the chutzpah award is still held by the Tories, who claimed last year that Silver Hill plans were changed following public concern. What court case?
Yes, indeed. Right, we now move on to historical items from the Hampshire Chronicle. Margot, the first from 25 years ago, please.
Yes, March the 8th, 1991. Pond Protection Call. North Pond is a terrific asset and amenity for Bishop's Waltham and must be protected, Mrs. Georgina Busher told parish councillors. Mrs. Busher advised councillors to form a committee to manage the North Pond if they considered accepting it for parish ownership. An attractive plan existed, organising the water into areas and providing vantage points, but she warned of dangers if the water supply to the pond continued to diminish. If in public ownership before it dried up, the pond area could become a dry park. Otherwise, developers would encroach upon it or want it for car parking, said Mrs. Busher. And a second news item of 25 years ago, a bird group is growing. Membership of the Hampshire Ornithological Society, the HOS, the country's leading bird study organisation, is about to break through the 1,000 barrier for the first time. But President James Hancock, who recently received the OBE for his services to ornithology, said at the Society's annual meeting on Saturday in Winchester Guildhall that although 1,000 was a significant milestone, it was still not enough. We've got to make sure that over the next 5 years we double this number. This poor old southeast corner of England is going to be filled in, built on, and drained. And HOS's task is to find out as much as it can about birds and their habitats before the damage is done.
50 years ago, March the 12th, 1966, there are two pieces here. The first one is entitled Channel Talk. Mr. F. Batisse spoke to the Winchester branch of the Franco-British Society on Friday in last week on the Channel Tunnel, illustrating his talk with coloured slides. His talk, which was in favour of a channel tunnel, concluded by saying that the reason it has been postponed so many times is because it's an international matter involving widely different interests. The cost of the channel tunnel, he said, would be less than either a bridge or even keeping the traditional means, being £140 million cheaper than a bridge and £100 million cheaper than traditional means of transport. And the second piece is entitled Blue Peter Badge. The BBC television magazine programme for children Blue Peter has presented 12-year-old Trevor Day of 67 Milland Road, Winchester, with a special gold award for resourceful action. Trevor ran from Bar End Road to the Broadway police station when he saw two people wrecking a telephone kiosk, and his report led to their arrest within minutes. At the Winchester County Secondary School on Wednesday, he proudly displayed his award, a gold Blue Peter insignia on a white shield.
And from 100 years ago, two items, March the 11th, 1916. The first one is entitled Women for the Farm. Addressing a meeting of agriculturalists at Northampton on Saturday, the Earl of Selborne said he wanted the farmers to ask themselves the questions, am I straining every muscle of my body and every nerve of my brain to produce all the food I possibly can on my farm in these times of my country's need? Am I trying to do this and at the same time release for service every possible man I can? If they could not conscientiously answer yes to those questions, he told them, you are serving not the king, but the Kaiser. There were cheers. He rejoiced that it was not the custom to employ women on the land, but in a crisis like this, they were justified. And the second item is called Avoiding Confusion. We understand that a new chime steam whistle has been fixed to the electricity department, and we're asked to say this will be sounded at 1 o'clock midday tomorrow, Sunday. The new whistle has been affixed in place of the former one, the sound of which resembled the noises made by the locomotives, on the L&SW railway in the vicinity of the Winchester station. And the authorities thought it desirable there should not be any misunderstanding on the part of the citizens in the event of an air raid.
Well, 200 years ago was March the 11th, 1816. Two items again. The first one is headed Death for Desertion. Winchester Crown Court, W. Smith and T. Plunkett, charged with forging and uttering at Greenwich a forged certificate in order to receive certain prize money supposed to be due to Thomas Plunkett. The prisoner had been entitled to the above sum as prize money for taking a French ship. But having subsequently deserted from His Majesty's service, he had forfeited his claim to it. He stated in defence that he was not aware of the desertion disqualifying him from receiving the above sum, and that he still considered himself entitled to it. The jury found him guilty. Death. The judge said it was intention to recommend him for mercy. Smith was acquitted. Second item, on a similar sort of subject, death for sheep theft. John Skay was convicted of having stolen 38 fathom of cordage belonging to His Majesty and receiving sentence of death, but was reprieved and sentenced to 7 years' transportation. John Nutcher, for embezzling a letter containing a £5 note directed to Robert Matthews Wooldridge, Esquire, was acquitted. Jacob Johnson, for stealing one ewe sheep, the property of Thomas Drew at Portsea. Guilty. Death. Well, I promised you earlier some excitement at the end of this section, and it is the lighting up times, which on Saturday the 12th of March, the sun will rise at 6:25 a.m. and set at 6:05 p.m. And on Wednesday the 17th of March, the sun will rise at 6:16 a.m. and will set at 6:12 p.m. Right, well, just a quick trot through some of the things that may be of interest to you over the next week or so. At the Cheswell Theatre, starting on Saturday the 12th of March to Saturday the 19th of March, Shauna Casey's Juno and the Paycock. There isn't a performance on Sunday, but there is a matinee on the 19th of March. There are very few tickets available during the week, but I know that there are still a few tickets left for the matinee. On Wednesday the 16th of March, the National Trust Winchester Association presents a talk by Dr. Hugh Cecil on Rex Whistler, and that's at Winchester Guildhall. Thursday the 17th of March, the Simon Callow on Orson Welles, and that's at the Theatre Royal. Friday the 18th of March, also at the Theatre Royal, Rockabilly Legends, an evening of non-stop entertainment and nostalgia. And it's a charity concert in aid of four local charities. Saturday the 19th of March at St Swithin's Performing Arts Centre, there's a spring concert performed by the Winchester Music Club, and they're presenting Mendelssohn's Overture to A Midsummer Night's Dream, Strauss' Horn Concerto No. 1, Opus 11, and Puccini's Messa di Gloria. Monday the 21st of March, the Undercroft of Winchester Cathedral, tea at 3. You can just turn up at 3 p.m. for a cream tea and a chat, and it will cost you the princely sum of £2.50. Monday the 28th of March, there's an open garden at Little Court Crawley. Now, I looked this up on the website. It's described as a 3-acre walled country garden which is sheltered from the wind, spectacular in both spring and summer with naturalised bulbs and good snowdrops, or and cowslips. That's open from 2 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. Right, we now move on to items of general news. And Margot, could we have the first item, please?
The popular Cathedral Festival will return. Commencing on July the 1st, the week-long festival is back for its 19th year and will bring with it some new events, including Winchester Symphony Orchestra. They will be hosting the final of their young soloist competition at Winchester College. Opening the festival will be the Wainfleet Singers, who will perform Brahms' German Requiem, a luscious and often poignant romantic setting on a large scale in the cathedral. The final event will be a performance of Benjamin Britten's Noah's Flood, or Noah's Flood, in association with the Hampshire County Council's Music Service on July the 9th. Winchester is home to numerous cultural events, many of which focus on a particular theme or anniversary, so says Carol Butler, the festival director. The festival's strength lies in tapping into the demand for a broad spectrum of eminent speakers and classical musicians, with a few surprises along the way. Tickets go on sale on May the 3rd from the Cathedral box office on 01962 857 275. I'll repeat that number, the Winchester Cathedral box office, 01962 857 275.
Spitfire celebrated by crowds at event. As menacing clouds gathered above Southampton Water, residents were not to be deterred from getting their glimpse of the Spitfire's 80th anniversary flight. Hundreds gathered on the waterside in bitingly cold conditions to watch the spectacle. From young families to pensioners, everyone was willing to brave the cold, even when the rain started to come down. With no knowledge of whether the Spitfires had set off from Biggin Hill Airport in Kent, it was a waiting game. But a cry went up as the first humming of the distinctive engine could be heard, and residents rushed for their cameras and searched the skies as the plane roared into view. Its black silhouette stood out against the clouds and dazzling sunshine, but as quickly as it appeared, within seconds, it was gone. The crowds were treated to two further encores with a few tricks, including a roll, to the squeals of excitement from children. With perfect timing, the skies went quiet, the flypast appeared over, and the heavens opened. And though only one plane appear in the skies, when bystanders had been expecting two, most residents said they were just happy to have seen one. All those at the waterside were aware of the plane's historical importance. Parents who brought their children stressed the importance of passing on the Spitfire's legacy to the next generation.
Diet error did not kill elderly man. A grieving family have questioned why a Winchester hospital gave an elderly man solid food, despite staff being aware he was on a liquid diet. Winchester Coroner's Court heard how Peter Tolhurst died at Royal Hampshire County Hospital on June the 7th of pneumonia. The 88-year-old retired electrician was admitted to the hospital on June the 3rd after falling at his home in Bishopstoke. His injuries were not severe and he was discharged later the same day, but it was immediately taken back to hospital hours later when his daughter Denise Turpin was concerned for his health. Doctors treating Mr. Tolhurst discovered he was suffering from pneumonia and he also had gallstones and was due to have an operation to remove them, but it was decided he was not well enough for this to go ahead. However, Mr. Tolhurst's family were unhappy as he ate braised sausage on June the 5th, despite being on a liquid-based diet. The pathologist confirmed sausage pieces were found in Mr. Tolhurst's airways. However, he ruled out choking as a cause of death, as he believed the pieces would have been regurgitated either during or after death. It was concluded that Mr. Tolhurst died of pneumonia, with contributory factors being heart failure and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Senior Coroner Graham Short recorded a verdict of death due to natural causes. Mr. Short said, "I find that he did eat some braised sausage on June the 5th. He should clearly not have been given the sausage because of the diet he was on. Having said that, it was not causative of his death. It is my conclusion that the death was due to natural causes. I've reviewed the evidence and my determination is that he suffered from a number of medical conditions predisposing him to chest infections."
Residents clean to on the Queen. Residents were out in force across the Winchester district to spruce up their communities in honour of Her Majesty the Queen. Hundreds took to the streets, parks, beaches and beauty spots to rid them of litter last weekend as part of a three-day initiative to mark Queen Elizabeth II's 90th birthday. Armed with litter pickers and bags, areas that benefited over the weekend from the Clean for the Queen scheme included the city centre, Itchen Valley, Twyford and Swanmore. Bizarre items found in the Itchen Valley included eggs, a live flare and a dead sheep. Residents were also out at the Effington War Memorial, Winchester Cathedral and across the South Downs and New Forest. This followed efforts around Hampshire on Friday, where people and workers got together behind the campaign, which is supported by charity Keep Britain Tidy. The aim is to get communities around the country sparkling ahead of the Queen turning 90 on April the 21st. And this is accompanied by many, many colour photographs of the volunteers carrying their litter pickers and their purple bags in which to put all the litter they pick up.
Professor backs tackling ban calls. A Hampshire academic is backing calls for children to be banned from tackling in schools rugby. Professor Eric Anderson says children are at greater risk of serious injury in a high-impact sport because they are less physically developed. He's one of a number of doctors and academics to sign an open letter to government ministers. School children should not be forced to collide with other children, he says, as part of the National Curriculum for Physical Education. According to the British Journal of Sports Medicine, the structure of rugby, namely the collisions involved, also leads to an extremely high rate of injury, said Professor Anderson. For example, he says, in one recent research article on 825 school-aged rugby players followed for one academic year, there were 426 injuries, of which 204 kept children from playing sport for 28 days or longer. This research also found that there were 81 diagnosed concussions. He added, given the difficult nature of diagnosing concussion, this is a worrying figure. The academics say children should play tag rugby instead, where injuries are greatly reduced. Mr. Anderson is a professor of sport and masculinities at the university. His stance on rugby has been criticised by Councillor Dominic Hiscock, a former mayor of Winchester and lifelong rugby fan. He has three sons who are keen players. He said it was a ridiculous idea. He said, tackling is a major part of the game. What is needed is an understanding and coaching on how to tackle. You need tackling. My sons loved it. Taking it out would destroy the game. It's a ridiculous idea. My sons wouldn't have had the same interest in it if it was not a contact sport, and they're not bullies. Councillor Hiscock said there is a greater safety factor. If a child wants to play rugby, it is much safer. If the child does not want to be involved, then a rugby field is not a sensible place to be.
Community worker celebrates service. And this is accompanied by a photograph of lots of smiling faces and bunches of flowers and people obviously having a good time. She's been serving the Winchester community for more than two decades. Jackie Lee celebrated her 25th year of service at Community First in Winchester with a special surprise party. The bash was held at Riverside Indoor Bowling Club and included a performance from Kingsworthy's community choir, which she belongs to. Jackie, who lives in South Wanston, is a coordinator for Winchester Dial a Ride Community Transport, Shop Mobility and Bikeabout, which is based in the Brooks Shopping Centre. The 59-year-old joined what was then known as Winchester District Council of Community Services in 1991. Winchester colleague Rachel Burney said, "Jackie's a much-loved member of staff and a real favourite with our service users. Nothing is ever too much trouble for her, and she's someone who is always smiling. The party was a big surprise."
Councillor tells hygiene low scorers, try harder. They are the worst rated establishments in Winchester and the surrounding areas when it comes to food hygiene. The Chronicle has compiled a list of food places which have received less than impressive ratings when visited by inspectors. The food hygiene rating scheme run by local authorities applies to restaurants, pubs, cafes, takeaways, hotels, supermarkets and other food shops. Each rating is from an inspection carried out by a food safety officer from the local council. The officer looks at how food is handled, prepared, cooked, reheated, cooled and stored. They also look at the condition and structure of the buildings, whether they are clean, have a suitable layout, lighting, ventilation, and other systems. The inspector also looks at how the business managers and records what it does to make sure food is safe. Six ratings can be dished out: 0 for businesses in need of urgent improvement, and a 5 for businesses ranked as very good. It is important to note that ratings are not a guide to food quality. In Winchester, there were 9 food places which require major improvement. The list includes some surprising entries, including the Royal Winchester Golf Club and The Exchange. In the villages and areas surrounding Winchester, a further 6 establishments also received bad ratings, including Banaras Fine Indian Cuisine on Main Road in Colden Common and Burger Me in Malvern Close, Bishop's Waltham. Overall, the number of establishments rated 1 or below in the Winchester City Council area is 15. Each of them requires major improvement. Councillor Frank Pearson, portfolio holder for Environment, Health and Wellbeing at Winchester City Council, said the establishments with bad ratings need to get their act together. "I'm extremely disappointed. The cafes and establishments are the front line as far as tourists are concerned, and to have any in the city that are needing major improvement is an extreme disappointment, and they should try harder to do better." He explained that the public do have a right to know which restaurants are not making the grade, and believes that this sort of information, being accessible, is vital to the public. "I have no sympathy at all for the restaurants and cafes that have done badly. They should get their act together. It is a signal to them and they will be inspected again and hopefully it will be an improvement. I hope they take the rating on board. Otherwise, the City Council has to take action and that is something we do not want to do." And I could read out a list of the 15 restaurants and pubs and so on, which are on their list, but I think that would be a little tedious to do. But at any rate, it is a warning.
Fundraising totals. The AGM of Muscular Dystrophy Winchester branch heard that the branch has raised an average of £7,000 a year since 1970. This AGM marked 46 years of fundraising by the Winchester branch, and Chairman Anne Jones thanked all her committee for their hard work. Richard Schoen, the auditor from Rothmans, announced that he would be retiring soon. He has audited the books for 25 years. The branch was reassured that he intends to continue with his charity work and that he will continue as trustee to the Breust Foundation, which has donated £2,000 each year to MD and also helps a local sufferer. Mr. Schoen reported that the branch had raised an average of £7,000 per year since 1970, making a total of £335,000 to date. The committee were all re-elected and Miss Jones announced a full year of fundraising to come.
Whither the wind from the east, for we need to dry out. A wind from the east is no good for man nor beast. The old adage was proclaimed by the BBC weather forecast recently, but is it true? I prefer the remark from Wally the Logman. The ground will never dry until we have cold, drying winds from the east. The land is certainly wet. There's no sign of warm, balmy spring weather or even of consistent drying east winds. According to the Met Office, the winter was the warmest since records began in 1910. And in the northern half of the country, also the wettest. We had less rain in this area in the early part of winter, as shown by the fact that streams and winterbournes have started to run relatively recently. And yet, the land has been amazingly sodden. The conclusions may be drawn that soils are compacted, impeding drainage with the result that root growth in autumn-sown crops is poor. Winter barley looks reasonably well, but the area is down a little this year. That's somewhat surprising, as the crop has undergone a revival over recent years. The area sown to winter oilseed rape is well down as farmers struggle with disease and pests. Winter wheat is variable too. On dry days over the past couple of weeks, fertiliser has been applied and there's been sufficient moisture for it to dissolve into the soil. However, many crops are still short of nutrients, not least manganese, due mainly to the very poor root growth, the result of sudden cold soils. Disease is rife, rust, eye spot, mildew and septoria, but will be difficult to control until the weather is more conducive to plant growth. As we come into lambing, there's a little more optimism. One farmer told me that his ewes scanned at 200% for the second year running. That means that the scan suggests that his ewes are carrying an average of two lambs each. A high figure considering that two-toothed ewes have never been lambed before. They are in good condition, having enjoyed plentiful grass for a year. They've been grazing on stubble turnips for the past few weeks and are now being brought into the sheds. Lamb prices have even been rising, unlike grain prices that are falling.
Awards mark work of unsung heroes. Unsung heroes have received recognition for their dedication at an awards ceremony. A team of 18 people from voluntary and community groups were commended for their contributions at an event at the Great Hall in Winchester. The High Sheriff of Hampshire, Lady Louisa Portal, handed certificates to 11 individuals and representatives from 7 community groups. They included Charlene Kennedy and Billy Murphy from the YMCA Newtown Youth and Community Centre in Southampton, who helped develop and decorate the previously abandoned building. Staff from Eastleigh-based Rape and Sexual Abuse Survivor Centre were also commended for their service. Other recipients were Trinity Winchester, Andrew Hounsome and Philip Chapman from West Hampshire Local Justice Area, Catherine McNeil from Hampshire County Council Children's Services, Kirsty Kramer from Motive 8 South Limited, Gosport, Justice of the Peace Beverly Robinson Grindy, the Blue Lamp Trust and Inside Out Project. Lady Portal said, "I am delighted to recognise these unsung heroes, all of whom are on the front line day after day, quietly carrying out their life-changing roles. Seeing firsthand the outstanding work that these people do to make a real difference to their communities and the lives of vulnerable people is fantastic." And this is accompanied by a colour photograph of those 18 people and holding up their awards in underneath the round table in the Great Hall.
upset at slow hospital progress. A politician has called on the NHS to get its act together over plans to build a new hospital north of Winchester. Speaking at a full meeting of Basingstoke and Deane Borough Council, Councillor Clive Sanders reaffirmed commitment to the critical treatment hospital, but said he was frustrated by the NHS's lack of progress at starting work. He added, "Last year I gave the commitment that as and when a decision was made on the location of the proposed hospital and the accompanying cancer unit, we would bring forward proposals for the council to support. A year on, and planning permission has been granted, but there's still no agreement within the NHS over whether the projects will go ahead. Instead, we are due yet another review from the Clinical Commissioning Group on health provision, despite already having had years to consider the issue. Even a snail would be embarrassed at the speed of progress." Planning permission was granted last October for the £150 million hospital to be built on a 22-hectare greenfield site on the north side of the A30 near Junction 7 of the M3. The 360-bed centre would centralise services for critically ill and at-risk patients.
Care Home celebrates 15th birthday. A former mayor of Winchester returned to the care home she opened 15 years ago. Staff and residents at Abbots Barton welcomed Georgina Busher, who as mayor performed the official opening in 2001. More than 60 people attended a party which featured a champagne reception. Mrs. Busher said, "I was flattered to be asked back. I've always been proud of the fact that I officially opened the home, and I'm so pleased it's been a success." Run by Colton Care, Abbots Barton is a purpose-built care home in Worthy Road. The oldest resident is currently 103. Previously, the oldest resident was 108.
Art space proposals on show at exhibition. Residents in Winchester can get a first glimpse of plans to transform a former industrial site into an arts space. Winchester City Council are proposing to build a creative enterprise centre at a former industrial site at Barfield Close. It comes after TJ Waste relocated from their 19th century former railway goods shed to bigger premises. Now Winchester residents can have a look at the plans in depth at an exhibition on March the 11th and 12th, which will be held at Winchester Tourist Information Centre at the Guildhall. The centre will provide space for workshops and rehearsals by a range of performing arts organisations, students and community groups. An existing industrial building adjoining the goods shed would also be refurbished and extended to house the council's drainage and street care team, who are currently based at the old depot on Bar End Road. The project would accommodate around 40 artists, with 22 being based upstairs, and the scheme would pay for itself within 21 years. Staff involved in the project will be on hand to explain the project in more detail and answer any questions. A set of exhibition boards explaining more about the project and including the architect's designs for the site will be on display. The exhibition runs from 3 to 7 p.m. on Friday and from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Saturday. Anyone is welcome to come along. The City Council is keen to capitalise on the growth of Winchester University and the presence of Winchester School of Art to try to retain creative talent in the city. And there is a photograph accompanying this, including councillors and arts professionals outside the building in Barfield Close at Bar End, where the council plans to transform it into a creative enterprise centre.
MOD to receive Crown censure over deaths. The Ministry of Defence is to be censured over the deaths of a Winchester soldier and two colleagues on an SAS training exercise in the Brecon Beacons in 2013. The Health and Safety Executive, which is referred to as HSE later in the article, said it will issue a so-called Crown censure following the tragedy on one of the hottest days of 2013. But for Crown immunity, the MOD would have faced prosecution for failings identified, said the HSE. Lance Corporal Craig Roberts died during the march, and Lance Corporal Edward Maher of Winchester and Corporal James Dunsby collapsed and died later. HSE Head of Operations Neil Craig said, "Specialist military units rightly need to test rigorously the fitness and resilience of potential candidates. Health and safety is not about stopping people from doing dangerous work or being properly prepared for military duties. Military training is inherently hazardous. However, such testing needs to be managed effectively. The MOD has a duty to manage the risks during training exercises. It failed to do so on this occasion. Since the incident, HSE has worked closely with the MOD to ensure it has learned lessons and how it can reduce the risk of similar tragedies occurring in future without compromising or changing the arduous nature of the essential training and testing." The HSE said its investigation found a failure to plan, assess, and manage risks associated with climatic illness during the training. These failings resulted in the deaths of the three men and heat illness suffered by 10 others. Despite its Crown status, the MOD is not exempt from its responsibilities as an employer to reduce the risks to its employees as far as reasonably practicable, it added. The breach of law the censure is being issued over is Section 2(1) of the Health and Safety at Work Act 1974, which states, "It shall be the duty of every employer to ensure, so far as is reasonably practicable, the health, safety and welfare at work of all his employees." The MOD cannot face prosecution in the same way as non-government bodies, and a Crown censure is the maximum sanction for a government body that HSE can bring.
And a really important story here about a poorly child. Drive to find a donor match. She's the 13-year-old girl that is vigorously searching for a stem cell donor. Zara Sheikh's only cure is a bone marrow transplant, and so far, no match has been found. Family friend Nicola Wiles wanted to help the Winchester teenager who suffers from leukaemia. Now she's set up a donor drive event on Saturday to boost Zara's chances of finding a match. "We just wanted to do something to help," Mrs. Wiles said. "I contacted the charity Delete Blood Cancer UK, and between us we decided to do a donor drive." The King School student of Nightingale Close, Winchester, is currently at Southampton General Hospital suffering from a blood infection, just one of the side effects from her latest chemotherapy. Her mother, Karenza Sheikh, said, "Nikki is just so amazing. She's been by our side the whole time." As previously reported by the Hampshire Chronicle, Zara has found it hard to find a match as her mother is English and her father, Lua, is Iraqi. This means she has a more diverse tissue type. The event on Saturday will be held at St Peter's Roman Catholic Church, Jury Road, and will run from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. If you're unable to attend, a Czech swab kit can be requested at www.deletebloodcancer.org.uk.
Don't let it be like Silver Hill. This was the cry from Highcliffe residents as the possibility of a new leisure centre at Bar End takes a step closer. At issue was the needless barriers being created due to a lack of information allegedly given to locals by Winchester City Council. During the Highcliffe Community Forum for Action meeting on Monday night, Richard Price of Petersfield Road pleaded with his neighbours to not let the project fall at the first hurdle. "Please, let's not make this become the next Silver Hill," said Mr. Price. "Let's not drag our heels with this. It is something that will be good for the local community. My children have been really excited about the possibility of a new leisure centre, and I agree that one in Highcliffe will be fantastic. The last thing I want is for this chance to pass us by and my kids to be too old to appreciate it when it is completed. The time to act is now." As previously reported by the Hampshire Chronicle, the University of Winchester and City Council signed a memorandum of understanding in January. This, in principle, commits the university to contribute £6 million towards the leisure centre, which could cost around £25 million. However, one resident, who didn't wish to be named, was worried about how controlling the university would be. She said, "I really hope we can use the centre at our leisure, as the last thing we want is for it to be used by the university all day and every day." Concern was also raised that the lack of available information meant residents cannot make a justified decision. Charlie Elderton of Portal Road said, "All we really want is to have some clarity on a few issues. These plans feel like they have come through very quickly, and we do not have the right amount of information to make a valued decision. The council will review the proposals at Cabinet on March the 29th. Councillor Ian Kate was pleased a number of residents supported the scheme. He said, "Many people want to see this go through for their children and not their grandchildren. I was pleased to see these people at the meeting. There are a few residents that do not want to see a centre at Bar End, but that was to be expected. If a strong enough group of anti-Bar End residents wanted to, with enough money and tenacity, they could kill off the plans. But hopefully that won't happen." Councillor Rose Byrne said an idea to turn the River Park Leisure Centre into a cultural and heritage hub was in the works.
Volunteer at jail. Would you like to become the eyes and ears of Winchester Prison? The Independent Monitoring Board is looking for new volunteers to join its team. New recruits would monitor standards of care, talk to prisoners and staff, and attend monthly board meetings. No special qualifications or experience are needed, and training and expenses are provided. Members must live within 30 miles and be able to dedicate about 3 to 4 days each month. For more information, visit imb.org.uk, that's IM for mother, imb.org.uk, or call 020-3334-3265, that's 020-3334-3265. The deadline for applications is March the 20th.
Former crack house set for major revamp. A former drug house, or crack house, left rotting for 4 years at the Gateway to Winchester, is set to be refurbished. The flat is one of eight at City House, set to be revamped and sold on the open market, prompting criticism of the group which owns the former supported housing block opposite the railway station. A2 Dominion said the work will take up to 7 months and provide much-needed housing for the area. The drug den was shut by police in February 2012 after complaints of noise and antisocial behaviour. City Centre Councillor Ian Tate, who has long lobbied for the work, said, "It's good news for the aesthetics of Winchester. The building looked absolutely atrocious, and they're now going to spend money on it, hopefully bring it up to as a higher standard as the Gateway to Winchester." He added, "I think it's a bit disappointing that the supported nature of the housing is being lost. A2 had been winding it down for a long time, but the people who were there had some supported housing needs." Steve Coggins, A2 Dominion's Regional Development Director, said, "Having recently finalised the final plans, we've now begun works to refurbish the block of flats at 16 City Road into attractive, much-needed housing for the area. We expect these works to take around 6 or 7 months to complete."
Closure of City Centre shop is a result of the Silver Hill debacle. A Winchester City Centre shop is set to close after 4 years in the city. Holmes & Company on Middlebrook Street will close on March the 31st after the owners PM & PP Limited chose not to renew its lease. They instead decided to concentrate fully on their Eastleigh-based import business. The store, which specialised in kitchenware, soft furnishings, toys and gifts, employs five people who will all lose their jobs. Retail manager David Steen said he was sad to be closing the store. He added, "It is a sad day because we do not want to have to close, but that is just the way the business world works sometimes." Mr. Steen said the store was victim of the Silverhill scheme collapsing and the council wanting tenants on longer leases. "Unfortunately, Winchester City Council wants a lot of smaller businesses around here to sign up to longer leases, which is not really what we want to do. This is a result of the whole Silverhill debacle." Mr. Steen confirmed that no plans were in place to find another location for the shop in Winchester.
A charity concert, and this was alluded to very briefly in the What's On section. A former pub landlord in Winchester has organised a special concert on March the 18th as part of his bid to raise £10,000 for charity. Martin Jacobs, 71, who was the former landlord of the County Arms in Rumsey Road, is hoping the evening of nostalgic hits from the 50s, 60s and 70s and comedy will help his bid to raise money for Click Sergeant, Trinity House, the Alzheimer Society and Naomi House. The Rockabilly Legends will take place at the Theatre Royal and it'll start at 8 p.m. The tickets cost £16 and are available from the box office at the Theatre Royal on 01962 840 440. I'll read that again. 01962 840 440.
Thank you very much, everyone. Well, that concludes the Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. Just another reminder that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problem with your recording. Her number again, 01962 870370. Thanks to the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and of course to our new editors, Sue Frayne and Brew and Pat Whitfield, assisted by Linda Vincent. And of course, many thanks to our readers, Margot.
Goodbye.
John.
Goodbye.
Richard.
Goodbye.
And from me, Peter. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you have finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible? Thank you very much and goodbye.